Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 901. Brought to you by iFanboy listeners like you there with the face. Hey, I'm Josh Flanagan, and I am here with my pal, old iFanboy timer. Is that a thing? You can't
sure.
Put that there.
Yep.
Paul Montgomery.
That's me. Hi.
Yes. Connor is currently he's in the woods of Europe. I can only assume he's training for some sort of incursion or something like. I don't know. I think he's gonna solve this Ukraine thing.
It's very Rocky IV.
Yeah. Exactly.
We just lost Paulie today.
Did we?
We did.
That's got to be a Philadelphia thing, huh?
It is. It's everything shut down. It doesn't take a lot.
That's sad.
So 901, huh?
Yeah, episode 901. Every week, one of us picks the book they like the best from their stack of comics this week. We call that the pick of the week. We will talk about that book. We will talk about other books. There's a patron pick to be dealt with. We will answer listener mail if we have time. Maybe we'll answer the same one twice. Anything could happen is the thing. There will be spoilers for your books. Paul, you have the pick again for the second time in not quite a month, but
it's weird. It's fate. Mm-hmm. Cosmic. It just worked out that way. We did the math. We crunched the numbers. Asked Connor for his permission, and I had the pick. But you're responsible for the pick because you said, hey, make sure you check out this Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees number one.
I was going to ask if it was on the radar before I said that.
It was not on my radar for some reason. But had I looked at anything about this... Oh, that's a Paul book.
Yeah, yeah.
Is this a Josh book? Well, we don't
know. We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. Okay.
We'll get to that.
Story and art by this Patrick Horvath, also not on my radar. I don't know if they're responsible for other books on the Amazon... You can follow a creator and click that follow button. I did so because I was so impressed, and I did not see anything else.
Patrick
in terms of credits.
Horvath is an American film producer, writer, and director, according to Wikipedia.
And they are responsible for the story and art. Letters here by Hassan Atmaneh Elhayo.
I like the first pronunciation, and it's the best. It's the best anyone's done with it.
Yeah, the best so far. Best we can do. All right. Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. This is a book about shame. It's a book about mystery, intrigue. The elevator pitch for this book is: what if the busy world of Richard Scarry had a serial killer, but what if also with that concept, it was good? Because if I just told you that concept, I don't know that I'd have faith that the creative team would be able to do it well. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of kind of this, but this comics out there and movies too. But this one is actually very successful. This looks not, and it's not aping one-to-one The Busy World of Richard Scarry or any other anthropomorphic animal stories, but it is a very charming looking little town, little village where this bear lady lives. And so does a goat guy and some sheep pull. And I'm sure there's a lobster man in there. There's dog people. I think there was an elephant guy in there, pigs, moleman.
There's a moleman.
There's a moleman, a mole family of molemans.
He's an assistant shopkeep moleman.
and they just live in this quaint little town. And but there's a murder that's happening. There's actually some murders. And what I loved about this is it's so well crafted, and it surprised me twice, even despite knowing, oh, the twist is that there's a serial killer.
So that was my question is, did you, because having not known about it, did you know what it was going to be when you started? Did you look it up?
So I didn't read anything about it. I just saw on the cover that some kind of body was being dragged and leaving a blood trail.
Wouldn't it have been cool if they didn't have to do that? I understand why they would, but...
Right. But even still, the narration by this lady bear, this anthropomorphic bear lady...
Samantha.
Leads you to believe that something is amiss, something is going wrong. And I think she tips her hat when she says, I have certain rules and I don't do it in town. I only do it in the city. And it's this sort of Stephen Kingsian kind of foreshadowing happening.
Also, I've only got a couple of rules, really. First, no playing in Woodbreck only. So right away, that's terrifying. And it sounds like maybe she's going to go do some BDSM stuff.
Right.
But it's slightly more extreme than that.
Yeah. And it's very, she doesn't just kill people. She has a methodology. And I really want to say, if this sounds at all intriguing, stop listening to this and go check it out, because there's some really cool surprises in it. One of the lesser surprises is so in addition to anthropomorphic animals, there are regular animals, wild animals.
That was very interesting.
That made me stop. That was a bit of a record scratch, because as she's hiding or she's burying some body parts, we'll say, she happens upon a on all fours wild bear. Yeah. And I was like, this world just got an extra layer to it. So I'm curious to see if there's anything else with that. Because sure, you're like in a world of anthropomorphic animals, like if you take like Disney, there's like Goofy and Pluto. Mm-hmm. And what is they're both dogs, right?
But presumably. Like
one is a domesticated dog and the other one is,
I mean,
yuck,
I would go so far as to yuck, exactly. He's a yucca sapien. Mm-hmm. I would go so far as to say that the other animal thing, I don't know that it needs to be explained. I think it's almost like, I don't know, like it could be a lot of things. I'm seeing, you know, like it could be like a metaphor for, you know, humans being a kind of animal, one step away. And so in this world, I don't know. I don't know what it'll be. I could see it as just being this is a facet of the world, and much like, you know, Pluto and Goofy, we don't really think about it.
Yeah, well, it's
but it's interesting.
It goes sort of unremarked upon in the Pluto and Goofy thing. Here, and it's not like she's like, oh my God, a wild bear. She's just like, doesn't she say like, it's between us bears or something, or it's...
I appreciate if we could keep this between just the two of us.
Between the two of us, yeah, okay. Yeah,
I mean, you could say that. You
know. So it's just an interesting wrinkle. It's just it usually, you know...
Are there fox people? Because there's fox in the woods. There's mouse people.
I believe, there's a fox. I think he sells newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fox sells newspapers.
Possibly.
Yeah. And so there's all different kinds of animal people. Plus, there's something going on with this goat guy who is, it's the long goodbye. He's getting forgetful. He can't find his glasses, which are on his face. What's happening with that?
Yep.
And
it's a fox.
And then... the last page sort of sealed the deal. I had another idea as to what was going to be the pick this week, and we'll talk about that in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the last page of this really sealed the deal, because it just ends on the perfect cliffhanger and the perfect button where we find out, and here's the spoiler, maybe the bear lady is not the only serial killer or the only murderer in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're sort of seeing this from her perspective. And and there's a very public, I mean, presumably it was planned that this would be seen.
You know, if you go back, this is actually really interesting.
Yeah.
So one, two, three pages before the end, there's an overhead shot on the second to last panel.
Mm.
You can actually see it. What's behind the cloth?
That's cool.
And it's very, that last panel is incredibly subtle because there's an inset. Basically, you're looking down and they're on a boat that's afloat in a parade. And there's an inset of one of the sort of buckles breaking and saying pop. And then if you look on the thing before it, like there's a tiny little rip that's happening, which, by the way, it seems like this is revealed intentionally given the way that it plays out. But that looks to be accidental.
But I mean, if that would be a terrible place to hide a body.
Well, I assume it was performative.
Right. So I don't know. A lot of mystery. I think it rewards rereading and closer study. I just think the craft is all there. It's just a great first issue and sets up an incredible mystery.
I think that it's interesting to point that out because as I looked, and this person is listed as a filmmaker, and you actually go to his IMDb page and has done a lot of different work in film and television. Camera assistant, you know, like writing, productions, like really involved in a lot of stuff. As far as I can tell, let's see, I'm not sure how many comics there are to the name, but this is a fairly advanced piece of work from a craft standpoint. If you're a person who's not doing comics full time or haven't been for a very a long amount of time, the level of draftsmanship and acting of these characters, you know, the thing, you know, like some people can do those anthropomorphic animals really well, and they give them the facial expressions that are then translated to cartoon turtle version of that, but you can still read it. The fox we were talking about has kind of a weird, like a smirk. His face is kind of, it's incredibly impressive, and it's not half-assed. There's fully realized backgrounds, perspective, strong storytelling through the whole thing. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, and it's very pretty.
Yes, it's light and pastel and beautiful. He did all of the, you know, coloring and everything,
like all the backgrounds too. Like it's a beautiful realized town, and then when they go to the city, it's a different look and everything. And this person could do, like, you know, children's books, like fully illustrated books,
and they would be great.
But they also have that ability to do sequential stuff, and that's really impressive. And the writing is there too, because I love the narration of it and the choice to tell this story from this perspective. And I'm very curious to see where it goes from there.
There's one issue of the series that Patrick Horvath drew.
Okay.
And there's this, and then there's a free comic called Free for All that is available on the website. As far as I can tell, no other comics credits, which is stunning.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, that's not nothing. Okay, so all of that said, I thought this was a really good comic. I think it was beautiful. I think it absolutely achieved what it set out to. I don't really like stories like this.
Okay.
I can't, I have a hard time with a protagonist who is a killer and like the scariest kind of, like, no, you know, psychopathic, no remorse, just people, you know, whoever, I guess people, animals are, you know, just meat to be played with, and you know, it scratches the itch or whatever it is. I couldn't get into Dexter at all. It's very similar to that.
Dexter is what I would compare it to. Yeah.
And so I think it was really, really well done, and it is 100% not my bag in terms of story. You know, like I don't really like horror stuff. I never have, or whatever this is. I don't know if it's horror, but it's not the monster kind. It seems to be fairly, other than the anthropomorphic animals, it's not supernatural in any way.
I mean, it's gruesome though. It's beyond a thriller.
There's a vivisection scene.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty, I can't watch that kind of thing like on a movie or a TV show. I can't. Like, I look away. I've seen every episode of ER 100 times. Anytime they cut into a fake person, I look away. I still can't do it. And I don't know if it doesn't gross me out. I generally just don't like the way that it makes me feel. And that's some of this. But I'm really glad. It was really well done. If this sounds like something you would like, I think you're going to be very happy with it. I'm really glad that you liked it. my criticism is 1,000% subjective. It's not even criticism.
It's a subjective thing.
I don't have anything to criticize. It's just not my thing.
Yeah.
I don't like how it makes me feel, but I know that people do. I don't fully understand. I'm old and I do not understand horror. I get it, but I don't get it. I've asked people explain it, and, you know.
It's sort of like, it's a matter of degrees too, even mm-hmm. for me. Like there was that movie that came out, was it late last year or I forget if it was this year or last year, Terrifier 2, that they were putting out warnings to people that people are throwing up in the theater, and that's great marketing for a movie like that. It's extremely violent. I hated that movie. It's like 2.5 hours. It has no reason to be that. And it's just gruesome for gruesome sake. Yeah. Come at me if you love that movie. If you do, that's fine. That's your thing. But there's something really artful about this, not just from the craft perspective, but just from the narrative. Like the bit where, as she's dispatching her victim, there's that sequence where they're riding platelets of their own blood. It zeroes in, and they're like riding it, like and it's just this level of surrealism on top of it that there's something extra going on here and so I was just very impressed with it, and this was just a total surprise, and I'm glad I went in knowing virtually nothing about it or what to expect. Well. So,
all right, we have to move along.
Yeah,
we spent a long time on that. It's a very light superhero kind of show, is what is my warning to you here. That said, we have the sensational She-Hulk number 179, or as they've called it here for some reason, one. This is a direct continuation of the sensational She-Hulk number 12, or 178, to be more clear about it.
Call it season two.
Yeah.
Of Rainbow Rowell, Jessica Gao, Andres Genelet, and Gavin Goudry, color by Goudry? D. Kunif, letters by Joe Caramanga, one of my favorite names to say.
I feel like you pronounced every one of those words wrong.
Yep. Even Joe. Yeah. It's probably not Joe.
Rawl and Genelet did Runaways together by the end. I think it was Chris Anka at the beginning, and then it became Genelet after a bit. Or maybe he was just on the beginning of this. I don't know. Her stuff kind of blends together in terms of the creative people, because I think she works with the same people across Runaways and She-Hulk to a certain extent.
I love that her work on Runaways, by the way. I think that's a fantastic character stuff and so much fun.
All of it, the way through. I think it started with Chris Anka, and I think Genelet was on it after that, but I am not sure. The backup story is the Jessica Gao, who is the showrunner of the TV show. Gavin Goudry, who I don't know. So we're focusing on the main story here, and it is a continuation of where we were, this romance between Jack of Hearts and She-Hulk, and she's got her punch club, which is a super-powered fight club.
Ben Grimm,
Titania, her grumpy husband, Absorbing Man. Who's
Molecule
the other one?
Woman? Molecular?
I don't know who that woman is.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah. I saw it. I was very excited it was coming out because I've really loved every issue. I really felt like this wasn't an issue number one. I felt like this was, and so I was sort of waiting for a kind of reset. And I really felt that this was the 13th issue, because other than the last page, which made me feel like I was missing something when it popped up.
Mm. Yes.
It was just more of what had happened before.
And I think you're reading, is it Savage Hulk now?
I'll tell you, it's on my
Indomitable Hulk. Whatever. You're reading the ongoing Hulk series, though.
I am.
And still,
it's just incredible. Just bagged, real old incredible.
And still you feel like you're missing something with that last page.
I don't know. I read the issue this week, and I don't know what
he's doing.
Because
I feel the same way. I was like, what did I miss?
Yeah, no, because he's very firmly on the road, involved in things in his own book. And so to have him show up here was weird. And I don't have time to go over this, but there's no need for his hair to look like that.
Yeah.
He's got like the long, like 90s bass player hair. There's no need. That, again, that is subjective. I don't even have time for that. I thought maybe we're going to get bumped forward. And I feel like instead we were kind of getting a reset about where we were instead of it moving along. And I think for a number one, that's weird. That may have been my idea of the expectations that I had. I also did get the feeling a little bit that Jack seems kind of sad all the time. And it's so like moody and melodramatic. And I just,
I mean, I think of him as a Silver Surfer character. And mm-hmm. so that makes sense that he would be sad and
but at
in
a
an
certain
existential
point,
way.
She is so self-possessed and capable and forthright is that the longer we get away from her, I'm starting to have a hard time understanding what she sees in him. Because at a certain point, you're like, why is she with him? That seems unhealthy. And that's what
sure.
I was starting to feel to me.
Well, the rest of the Punch Club is to be believed. He is a real catch. All the women seem to be very attracted to him.
Yeah, there was that reveal where he shows up and they're like, ooh, like that? Even in that costume. And I was like,
right.
I didn't know what they meant. I kind of came around to, I was like, I guess they're saying he's attractive, but it wasn't clear to me because he's so goddamn goofy looking.
He's a short king or Jack. It's a short Jack.
Yeah. When she was chasing the criminal before who was charming, I was like, I get that. He's exciting. But you're sort of coming home the other way, and he's like, "You can't touch each other. I'm not charged up. It's this. I'm sorry. You know."
I feel like maybe they'll go there. Like maybe they will address that, because I feel like they're setting up like kind of how sad and like, I don't want to say pathetic, but like he's hanging out. He's like, "I'll be back at the apartment."
Yeah, yeah, and
you show up when you can. You know,
I would not put it past Roald to be playing that. She's too smart. She's too thoughtful about her characters and their personalities to not know what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. It's one of those I'm trusting the person. And so, I mean, my criticism really has to do with the fact that as a number one, it felt weird. Changed my expectations. I had expectations of it, and
it's definitely a weird one to jump in on. Definitely go back. I think it's three little slim mm-hmm. trade paperbacks worth of issues to check out. And
are they four issues a piece? That's crazy.
I mean, definitely recommend. It's fun.
It's one of the best books of the past few years. Mm-hmm. One of the most fun things from Marvel.
I will say, Andres Genelay, I love the big characters.
Yeah.
Like, is it Awesome Andy? And then the Deviant, like, mm-hmm. really good at putting these oversized characters, these double stuff kind of characters.
And that was a really good opening scene.
Yeah.
Her going to the law and having to deal with these two sort of crazy, you know, D-lister Marvel bench characters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was really fun.
It reminded me of when Bendis was doing the original like run of Jessica Jones and mm-hmm.
yeah,
having
Jessica's clients,
yeah, all the clients and even Matt's clients.
Looking forward to it. It was a good issue in the way that they usually are. There's lots of fun stuff in there, but I bumped on a couple of things and I'm not wary about it yet. Just wasn't sure about those choices.
We All did right, there's your songs. Superheroes for the week.
is that it? No,
that
I think
might
you
be
got
it.
One more. You got one more.
Oh, okay.
Later.
Okay, so Swan Songs. We talked about issue 2 or 3 last time.
Yep.
I guess it was 3. Yeah, last time I was on. Almost the pick. This one's fun. It's this guy who's getting released from a 2-year stint in prison. Small-time crook. Going back to his crime family, basically his brother. And there's this interesting stylistic thing where he's big into Mad Libs, or as they're referred to, Sad Libs in this. And he's sort of narrating what's going on with the Mad, like filling out like the adjectives or whatever. And I think it works for the most part. My question for you is, do you feel like the ending is cool or a cop-out?
So that is the question.
Yeah.
And that is definitely the thing to think about. I really enjoyed this all the way through. It's sort of treading the line between, it wasn't quite serious, but it was kind of heavy, but then also silly in a way at the same time, like having the revolutionary founding fathers, you know,
right. It's like,
and pointing out it's Point Break, and just having the sort of masks on their faces, which took away,
which is a bad plan. If you're going to rob a bank,
yeah,
it's a bad plan.
It was all a bad plan. And so I like the metaphor of the Mad Libs in that he felt as if he couldn't control the things that were happening in his life. And in fact, he couldn't, either because of the way things were going or because of his unwillingness to say no mm-hmm. to things. And so the Mad Libs were a way that he could sort of, you know, control his destiny or do whatever. And he has this interesting scene with his ex-girlfriend,
yes.
you know, where she's trying to say, you can do this. And you're like, oh, no, he's too weak to do the right thing here, and he's going to get mixed up in it. And so, yeah, the last page is everybody's been killed, and his brother has not been killed. Brett is basically the guy. He gets out of prison, and his brother immediately is like, we got to do a job. And he's like, I don't want to. He's like, you got to. And he's like, okay, I guess I can't do anything about it. And the B plan, when it doesn't go, is to run over the guys, the guards. Mm-hmm. And then so his brother, Lin-Manuel Miranda, only when he puts on the suit, yells, do it, Bobby. And we cut to him in the driver's seat with a confused look on his face saying, what should we do? And you see the Mad Libs of the scene as it would play out. But all of the, you know, words that would tell us what's happening are out. And that's the end of it.
It's basically giving the reader the ability to choose. And
if I think about it in that choice with the theme of the Mad Libs throughout the whole thing, it's pretty elegant.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it is satisfying, but given everything that came before it and walking through it and talking to you about it, I feel like that's the choice that you had to make.
Yeah, I think it's a neat idea for like a one-shot comic.
Yes.
It doesn't feel especially substantial. And then there's stuff like even like the henchmen, like mm-hmm. Big Stu, like they're all archetypes.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel real. So I like, I think I liked it more as they were heading home and then like meeting, you know, the ex-girlfriend and mm-hmm. stuff, and she's got a kid now, and like there's stuff there, and like it would be like a neat like short film or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that ending there, I was like, eh, but that's kind of, it's kind of wishy-washy.
My only thing would be is that, you know, W. Maxwell Prince, or Big Dubs, as he's known to his friends, or she, I don't know, I have no idea what W means, this is the second sort of anthology series that we've gone through. And then there's Ice Cream Man, which I read the first one and I didn't get it. I might get it now if I read it again. I think it's very possible, but maybe that train has sailed. You know, you're doing a series of short stories, issue size short stories, and they're trying to, trying stuff. And I can't help but respect that.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. You know, like, this is the place to do that. And so if it's, you're not sure about it, it didn't fall on its face. It's not that. Is it the right choice? I mean, on paper, it kind of makes sense. Did it feel satisfying? Kind of no. You know, but, you know, then issue number 5, that's a new one.
Right. And I feel like this is something that I would recommend people maybe check out as an anthology. If you're mm-hmm. just reading individual issues, they're like, you know, it's hit or miss. But if you have it, you know, a whole chunk of these, then one might work for you and the other one might be.
You know, what's weird about me in anthologies is that I like them like this, where you get a bit of it and the next time something else comes along. A collection of stories, like in a bound anthology, I often lose track of because the stories don't cause you to turn pages to the next one.
Gotcha.
I want that continuity in a big story. So here I get to reset every month or so, but I don't like, you know, those like 80 page giant of stories, or mm-hmm. there was the Headless Horseman this week from, you
right.
know, I don't love that format.
And I think with something like that, mm-hmm.
Those are shorts.
They're shorts, so it's like then you have even less of an opportunity to make a mark, and it feels mm-hmm. it can sometimes be even more gimmicky, mm-hmm. and you feel slighted as a reader. I'm like, oh well, I got 5 or 6,
yeah,
you know, blushes at a story.
I do. I do really like, I really like reading a good comic book short story because so it's not done that often. I mean, compared to like in the vast majority of comics is people all trying to tell longer stories or short stories, masquerading, whatever it is. But when somebody really nails a short story.
Well, what do you mean by a short story though?
I mean,
like a single issue or?
I mean,
like,
a single issue counts as that, but there's also like 5-page short stories. There's the famous, Hellboy Pancakes. That's like, to me, the best
example.
The gold
standard.
Yeah, the gold standard. I know a long time ago, before Tom King was a household name, he did a book with Tom Fowler. It was a story in a Vertigo anthology about time travel and killing Hitler.
Right.
And I remember it because it was just so excellent. So a short story really has a chance to stand out. And so, this story, what's the silver coin that Michael Walsh did?
Mm-hmm.
With a bunch of different writers, and you draw like, again, I don't actually love those horror stories or whatever, but I really like that format. But again, they're in issues. Like I wouldn't read like a book of the 12 of them. I wouldn't do it.
That's
I wouldn't
fair
finish.
Too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's where people can experiment and try things. And so the end of this works in that way. I did not read Coda number 2 or 1 for that matter. What do you get? This is from the folks at Boom.
This is Cy Sperrier and Matthias Bergara, and you can get a deluxe edition came out recently of the original run of Coda, and that I think was another one where it was like 3 paperbacks. So this is like season 2 of Coda.
I did not know that.
Number 2. I would liken it to like a heavy metal fantasy kind of thing, more on the lighthearted side of it. But it's just gorgeous. And last time we talked about the art of like Philippe Andrade. Mm-hmm. We talked about
European artists.
European comics. We had an extended conversation about that and why we like that, and us being like kind of being unable to define what that means. But just really lush, high saturated colors. There's kind of a painterly quality to it, sharp edges. This has a really scary unicorn in it that curses at people, but it's, in symbols and like wingdings. and this is about a post-magic fantasy world where everything is in flux. And if you like sort of Terry Pratchett and Discworld kind of stuff, or like Michael Moorcock fantasy, where everything's just weird and kind of yucky and gross, but also whimsical at the same time. This is very fun and very imaginative, and I love it. Like a lot of the stuff that's set up in the first issue is kind of already resolved in issue 2, and then new conflicts have sprung up. So there's a lot of complexity going on. It's a farmer, basically. It's a former bard. His wife is like an Amazonian, like barbarian berserker lady. It's very cool. And they've just found out that she's pregnant. And he's narrating this to their child, it's sort of like Saga in that way. that's from the baby's point of view in Saga, right? That's from the kid's point of view, writing about her parents and how they met. This is him writing to a little Gap. He refers to the child. And there is a would-be king that they wanted to install. This like kind of Steve Bannon kind of fantasy guy called Mildew wants to install this kid. He gets killed. Now this cult has sprung up and they believe that they need to go to the moon. So it's wild. It's wild stuff. Very beautiful. And I just wanted to get it out there because I don't know if people have given it a shot. It's kind of this, I don't want to say dark horse because it's Boom, but it is a dark horse kind of story, and very quietly, very cool.
So Matthias Bergara is from Montevideo, Uruguay.
Uruguay. Okay.
Which is, I can't think of any Uruguayan artists who I have seen.
I know a lot of South American in general artists.
A lot of Argentina.
Argentina, Chile.
A bit of Brazil.
Yeah. Definitely Brazil. There's something going on down there?
I mean, I tend to think of, I thought for sure, given the name and the way the art works, I thought this was going to be a person from Spain.
I did as well. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, that makes sense. Let me tell you, not you. I mean, you might want to know, Paul, but let me just talk real quick about ways that you can be part of the show, the system we got going here, if A, you so choose, and B, you are able. This is voluntary. You don't got to deal with any of this stuff. But we have patreon.com/ifanboy. This is the engine. This is the lifeblood. This is the fuel of the program. Here that helps us keep this going. So you can directly support the show. People in the past have unlocked shows. There's a really nice bedroom communities. I don't know, that's not the right word. There's communities on Discord and on Facebook that sort of harken back to the good old days of the Rev3 forums and the early iFanboy communities as we were there before the web diaspora happened from social media ruining everything. There is a monthly patron hangout, which you can watch live or you can watch later. We try to make it good for the people who are contributing, for sure. There's now tier exclusive merch. Depending on your level of support, after 3 months, you'll receive a Junior Jamoke t-shirt or tote bag or hoodie, depending on what it is. There's other things, sticker, mug, poster, all sorts of things you can get. At the $5 higher level, you get a patron power, which we'll be getting to. This is a spoiler. And everybody gets to vote on the patron pick in each show. So patreon.com/ifanboy. Thank you so much. Over at ifanboy.threadless.com, there are 13 designs that can be put on t-shirts and device and all sorts of things. I still want to make that shower curtain work. I think that's a good
mouse
time.
Mouse pads, that's where the money's at, man.
Yep, it's true. I can't use a mouse. I have blown out my ability to use a computer mouse for the rest of my life.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's terrible. All trackpads for this guy. And by the way, Windows does not have a good trackpad, I found out at my job. You can go to ifanboy.com/support for the PayPal link right there if you don't want to deal with any of that. ifanboy.com/Amazon. There are links on the website, the music, the Booksplode, all that stuff. And you can get through those to go to Amazon if you want. And it's an affiliate account. You know how that works. Bookshop.org is an aggregate of independent bookstores you can order online. So the one we were just talked about, you don't want to do that for books. And you want to help independent bookstores, which is an extremely valuable and valiant thing to do. That's where that will be. The links will be on the website where appropriate. So over to Boom, where we have more anthropomorphic animals. We talked about Wild's End number 4 when you were on last time.
Mm-hmm.
I think 3 actually. Yes, because I was a backlist and I read 4 this week. So you and I talked about 3, and then this was 5 that came out this week. We've got Dan Abnett writing this story with art and letters by I.N.J. Culbard. That is the most unusual name in comics I've heard in some time. And not like just everything about it is unusual. This is a little more along the lines of what you want to think of when you see anthropomorphic old-timey animals. These are country British folk animals. And I mean, listen, if you told me on paper that it's this and then there's a War of the Worlds thing and they come in, Victorian lantern robots come in and make humans toil in the mines, I'd say, I don't want to read. They're not humans, but the people. I would say, I don't want to read that.
I would say, sign me up.
Yeah, no, I get that. That's fine. I am so in love with this book. I cannot get enough of this tiny group of characters who are this combination of sort of British country stereotype folks, but also, I think, really deeply entrenched relationships with each other. And you know, there's the skipper, you know, the old man who's in charge of the boat that they were all on, and he's losing his mind and he's aware of it. And I don't like when dialogue and dialects are written phonetically in word balloons. Because it slows me down a lot of times. But man, Abnett leans into this very far. But if you can hear it when you're reading it, it is perfect. I can hear them. You know, it's not hard to read. It doesn't slow me down. It tells me exactly where they are and who they are in a way that I really dig. And I'm like, and I am into this. I don't know what's going to happen. I want them to see. We are at the bottom. This is, I think the next issue is the last one.
Yeah.
And we are like, things are at their bleakest right now. And I think it's just delightful.
It's super fun. It reminds me of, so there's this old British TV show called Survivors. It's from back in the late 70s. It's created by Terry Nation, who's the guy who came up with the Daleks for Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. And it's like The Walking Dead, but lo-fi. I don't know. It's like it's not. First off, there aren't zombies. Mm-hmm. It's just a plague has wiped out people, and there's just like far less people around. Mm-hmm. But they have to like they're mostly in like rural England or like Scotland, mm-hmm. and just trying to get by. And there's something very like salt of the earth about it. And not as edgy as The Walking Dead. It's not as, you know what I mean? Like what separates these things about like this dystopian, like survivor group, what separates it from something like The Walking Dead, which is just so intense all of the time. This is more about people working together and solving problems. And
it's very like, I mean, it's dumb. It's very British,
yeah,
in terms of like the war. And mm-hmm. This is terrible. We will bear up under it. We have no choice but to. And the introduction of the hermit out in the woods who likes explosives,
yeah,
put the whole thing over the top.
Yep.
Everything he says is delightful. You know, like it's right on the edge of like total like stereotypes, not the word, but like archetype of these people. And I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's just delightful.
And I like that they reference like back in the war and like he's talking mm-hmm. about, you know, over there, like say what you will about those, you know, those rotters over there, but you know, they make good bombs. And like, and it's so that there's like a lived in like history to these characters and they're kind of world weary. And
is it Thomas? I don't know. The hermit, you know, they're like, there's an invasion and you're not going to believe what we say. And he's like, that's fine. Invaders are invaders. Let's do this.
Right.
You know, it's, mm-hmm. he's the guy you need at the right time. Yeah, love it.
It's really good. Yeah.
I decided not to go with Jay Garrick, The Flash number one.
I think it's cool. So back when I got back into comics as an adult, my book was Justice Society of America,
mm-hmm.
The Geoff Johns and those great Alex Ross covers. And so I was excited that, hey, they're going to give the old college try to the JSA again. And this is fun. So this is Jeremy Adams with art by Diego Olortegui, who reminds me a lot of like Francis Manapul. Mm-hmm. It's just a very fun, it's almost an all ages style, I would say. It's a very like cuddly looking DC book. And this is sort of what I want from my DC books. This is just a great... yeah, I would say it's Jay and his daughter who was removed from time at some point. This is the new conceit with the JSA is that they have various relatives who were taken away from them and now they're back on the scene. So elderly Jay and his wife find themselves with this like teenage daughter. I love her design. Judy is her name, The Boom. So it's, again, the Flash family, but it's not annoying like Wally's family. Why do we hate Wally's kids so much? I don't know, but they just suck. Judy's cool.
I'm shocked that people didn't take that as gospel in the Discord community. I Connor, that might be why he's gone. He just was like, I don't know how to live in a world like this. And there's a lot wrong with the world. There's a lot of things, but like that was the tipping point for him. I don't have a handle on the Justice League / Flash era we're in right now. I'm reading that Justice League book. I don't love it
mm-hmm.
because I just don't quite know what it is.
Do you mean Justice League or do you mean Justice Society?
Justice Society.
Okay, just making sure. Yes. Okay, the overall Justice Society thing, I don't know. It's complicated, but this is fun. I like speedsters. And this has like very over the top, like Dr. Elemental, I think is
nice.
The new bad guy. Like that's, I don't know. That's kind of the kind of thing that I want. Tell me about The Forged.
The Forged?
Yeah.
So this is the Greg Rucka, Eric Trautman written sci-fi military series. I just love this. I love this book so much.
That's good to hear. I'm not caught up on it, but I'm looking forward to it.
It's really big and space. There's, you know, there's an empire, and she's, it's not unlike, I don't know if anybody's watching Foundation. Mm-hmm. It's a galactic empire sort of like that, where the size of it is mind-boggling. It's just one person who has power, and she's the empress, and there's these different elements, but it's focused mostly on these, I'm going to say there's four of them, maybe five of the Forged, who are these, again, not unlike in Lazarus, sort of genetically engineered perfect soldiers, you know, who can do anything, and everybody's utterly loyal to the Empress, and there's intrigue and stuff is going down. It's fairly contained, whereas Lazarus, I kind of lost the thread of, because they were jumping around to a lot of different people in a way like a novel, which I like, but I don't know that it always works great in comics, especially if they don't come out regularly. Well, it's good.
I just remember there being a lot of lore for that, and like a lot of like backup material.
So that's
here.
Yeah,
they did jump around.
But okay. I don't like reading it, because I don't think that, A, I finished the comic, but B, reading those pages of text after reading a beautifully conceived and drawn comic book, it feels like work. And just like whatever it is, you can write all that stuff out, and people want to read it, fine, and you put that into your story, but I want to see that on the comic book page. And in that way, I feel like this is more contained. Now, Greg Rucka is always going to build out an incredibly detailed and dense world, you know, outside of what's on those comic book pages, and you can take that or leave it. But I really enjoy this. I enjoy these characters. You know, it's Troutman. He's worked with Rucka forever. He's a good guy. He is, you know, he's into military stuff. Mm-hmm. And you've got characters in here who are doing full-on hoorah, you know, Marine or you know, Delta Force, that lingo, that patois that they sort of talk to among each other. And I love that. I'm a sucker for it.
What's the tone like on this? Is it similar to something like Lazarus, or?
I feel it's much more, like Lazarus is dead set in a sci-fi, hard sci-fi reality.
Right.
This is more, it's galactic in scale, I guess. And they're
fun?
Sort of, I think so, yes. Okay. Yeah, I think the characters make it fun. And I think the characters in Lazarus aren't necessarily that fun. But the main characters in this are. And there is a little bit of whimsy, I think. I don't know if that's exactly the right word, but there's some of that. I really like it. And it's also coming out pretty regularly. So I'm happy about that.
That's good.
They're like, I finished the last one and I was like, wow, this is the cover price was relatively high. And it's 60 something pages, or I think it's 50 pages of story. And I thought maybe that's special. And then this one came out, you know, a month later, 50 pages of story. I don't know what Mike Ann Henderson is doing, but he's keeping up, or they did it ahead of time or whatever. But, you know, a long time ago, I first became aware of Eric Troutman because he co-wrote Checkmate with Rucka, and it was mm-hmm. fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the combination of those two people, like that reins Rucka in a little bit. Not that he needs it. He's amazing. But tightens it up a little for like this story so that it doesn't feel like it's going to spin out of control like maybe Lazarus did, which I love. I will read it, you know, forever. But, you know, it comes along once or twice a year now, so it's harder to get a hold on at this point.
Rumpus Room, number two. Have you been reading this Mark Russell book?
No. What did we just talk about in the beginning?
Okay.
You look at that cover, and I'm not going to go, nah, it doesn't matter who's writing it. Unless you convince me now.
You don't need to. It's more of a thriller, I would say, than a horror thing. This is, and if it's got Mark Russell's name on it, I'm interested.
Sure.
And it's wild because he does such disparate things. Mm-hmm. But the through line is that they're always thoughtful. They're often politically minded. This is about like if Elon Musk had people trapped in his basement. It's this billionaire who has a number of former employees in a very complex jail system under his house, which I think is in LA. Seems like a very LA thing. There are weird, like modern art sculptures around his house. And so the Rumpus Room, the idea of it, and, this is one of those, Rick Remender does these often too. You'll get to the back of one of these, high concept, dystopian sci-fi books. And there's an essay in the back about why they're writing them. And Mark Russell talked about how, you know, everything's going to hell in the real world, and we've kind of resigned ourselves to it. And so this is a story about how people basically learn to live with the idea that they're doomed. Because the people who are very competent, intelligent, capable people stuck in this prison system in this guy's basement have basically resigned themselves that they're not going to be able to get out of here. And what does that do to people? And you've got this woman who ends up in there in the first issue is actually a cop, and she's able to, and her sister is missing, and she believes that this guy knows about it. She gets drugged, ends up down in the basement, and the hook is she was able to get a pistol in there. She had something strapped to her ankle. And the question is, did he allow that to happen, or did that sneak through the cracks? And she's, in this issue, is getting to know a lot of the people that are down there. And they're saying, anything you're going to want to try, we've tried it and it hasn't worked. And if you're bad, we can vote. Because every so many hours or days or something, one of them has to go in this room and they're never seen again. And this woman's like, well, we got to try. We got to work on something. And so we're still in the second issue meeting all the different people, and we're finding out what their roles were in this billionaire's life, outside, on the outside. Mm-hmm. In parallel, this billionaire is facing a hostile takeover of his business, and he's looking forward to it. One of the characters that we meet down there, is a trans woman, and you find out that she was actually his child. And so, like, what is she doing down here? Hmm. And you get a flashback where they go to this academy when this person was a kid, and all the parents were to bid on this art from their kids. And he starts making fun of the other kids' art because it's kid art, and he ends up buying all of it. And then buying the school or whatever, because he can just buy and sell whatever. And so it's about the evils of capitalism, but also, like, what is our responsibility even when we feel helpless, and what do we do? And how do you work within that when you feel like all hope is lost? So, fun story.
Yeah. I feel a little like we have to move. We're way over. But I feel a little like I had to stop watching John Oliver. Mm-hmm. Because it's very funny and he's brilliant and all that, but like it's just like it's focusing on how bad the bad stuff is.
Hey man, I get it. I absolutely
a lot of Mark Russell's stuff is like you know, he's wearing his existential dread on his page, and he's very good at it and thoughtful, but at a certain point, like, it's just it's a little much sometimes.
Sure.
So there, those are the books that we wanted to talk about. And every week the patrons get to vote on what book they would like us to read. And very interesting here is that I don't think I would have realized what this was had this not become the patron pick. And that is / Back to School #1, Story and Art by Zoe Thorogood, who Booksplode listeners,
yeah,
and other readers might remember from her book whose title is just left my brain entirely. Something of the World. Help me.
Working on it.
A young, extremely talented creator.
It's Lonely at the Center of the Earth.
It's Lonely at the Center of the Earth.
And The Impending Blindness of Billy Scott.
And the art for one. Joe Hill's Rain, which was a wonderful little miniseries. And here we have her writing and drawing. I don't know if I'd go so far as to call it work for hire. This is Tim Seeley's sort of long running off and on property.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
A long time, which I've totally never been into. Not because I don't like it, just it's not something that was on my radar. And when I've read it, it didn't really speak to me all that much. But this very much functions as if you've never read it, this is you could read this, no problem. Like you wouldn't.
Yeah, like I'm also like, I didn't do a whole lot of reading about this. I mean, I read the issue, but is this like a, I don't know if this is like a soft reboot or
I don't know
if this is like a year once, or because it's like about her starting out and then by the end she ends up in like a school for girl assassins of killing these slashers. My thing is, I was not excited because I have dipped into the world of hack slash previously, and like you, it didn't grab me. I think because it's like it's got extra levels of complication in terms of what the world is. Mm-hmm. Like what, like slashers are what, mutant killers? Like
some zombie-esque thing.
Right. And I could never sort of like latch on to the rules of the world and everything. And then just the aesthetic didn't jive with me. And it just wasn't for me. But then when I saw Zoe Thorogood's name on, I was like, oh, cool. And so I liked it on a craft point of view. There's a cool bit where she's having a fight in the present, and then in parallel, it's her fighting her mother, who had become a slasher, had transformed into one of these creatures. Mm-hmm. And so you're seeing them both at the same time. And I don't know if that whole sequence fully worked for me, but it was at least a cool idea.
I found it to be more interesting than enjoyable.
Yeah.
In terms of pairing a creator who I know for doing a very specific sort of thing very well and very uniquely. Like there's not, you know, I didn't read Lonely at the Center of the World and think, oh, this is just like so-and-so. It was a completely new thing when I read it. And so to have this person come in and do a story with an existing property and sort of try to fit that style into what is more or less an established, you know, sort of single issue comic book story. It's not a superhero, but you know, it follows those rules and formats, and bringing her skill to it, which is very evident. But I did enjoy it more in terms of like examining how something worked than I was like into the story.
Mm-hmm.
Did I like it? I did not like it, but like, are you going to read it again? I'm not. I'm giving away the ending of this, you know, like as a thing. Like, I'm glad I read it. I'm glad that it was there. I hope people really like it. It's not going to be my thing, and I'm not curious enough to sort of keep going and see what gets done with it for many reasons, you know. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you like it wasn't good. That's not why.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it wasn't really my thing, and so it's hard for me to figure out what to say about it, like specifically. I mean, what did you think? I'm assuming you're sort of on the same page.
I'm basically on the same page. I wish I could articulate why it's not the kind of thing for me. I guess, you know, the humor didn't exactly work for me. Mm-hmm. I didn't find it particularly funny. I just think it's, and maybe this is just speaks to the fact that I haven't read a lot of hack slash. I can't wrap my hands around what the world is and what's happening.
I don't get what it is. I mean, and I say that meaning like having read it.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand. It's not speaking to me at all.
So like it's not just like she's Buffy the Vampire Slayer. She's a chosen one who has to fight vampires. This is like extra layers of complexity on top of that, where she's a person who is traveling around with a mutant guy who's not one of the bad. Is he a slasher? Is he a good slasher?
I think he's not, but he appears to be.
But he appears to be, but he's green. Like,
and he's a Russian. So she gets to do silly cartoon Russian voice.
Right. And so they're in, and then the school thing, and I need something. I don't know.
I'll tell you this. The autobio work, I don't know if it had a level of sophistication, although I do think it did, but a very young, raw form of sophistication.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to categorize her because she's quite young. I mean, she's 23, 24, you know, like when that book was done, you know, she's a kid. And again, I don't say that like in a
dismissive way.
Not at all. But I think that brilliance was there, that and I don't know that it fits into this because I don't really see, I don't know. It's slicing off the stuff that I like, that personality, that personal stuff in there. And I don't see that personal stuff in here. Mm. I see somebody trying to do an entertaining story in a genre and a topic that I'm not really interested
in. It's interesting. She's also done some like video game tie-in stuff, like mm-hmm. Life is Strange. And then she's also done, she's doing these graphic novels based on the Walking Dead Telltale games, like the Clementine mm-hmm. character. So I mean, between doing personal stuff and then like, you know, sort of work for hire kind of things. I mean, it's interesting to watch. I mean, she's definitely, you know, working on stuff and trying things, and definitely, you know, one of those artists to watch.
And I'm super cool with, like, I love it. Make your living, do your stuff, have fun, do all the different kinds of things. You know, sometimes an artist you like, you know, a musician you like does, you know, they're in a hard rock band and then they do an acoustic album or an electronic album. Maybe you don't like that one as much. It doesn't speak to the, like, Jesus, what are they doing now? That other thing was great and this is awful. It's not my bag.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really have criticisms for it, but I don't know. I don't think it was bad, but I'm not sure.
Yeah,
I
think our criticism is sort of with the IP and
yes,
and the franchise, yeah, not necessarily the work here.
It was a losing proposition.
Right.
And I love Tim Seeley's work. I think he's mm-hmm. fantastic. And I've given a try and it's like, oh, this isn't something I understand at all. And so, you know, you were behind the eight ball to begin with mm-hmm. this.
Yeah.
Which makes it very difficult and yet necessary for us to assign a numerical rating to this. So we have to do a rating. Ratings.
Okay. I'm going to give it 2.5.
3. I'm going to assume it accomplished what it needed to within this genre and brought a fresh take to it.
Hmm.
I think if maybe you've been into Hackslash and maybe you were getting a little bored or you wanted to, I bet you enjoyed this.
I'll say I like horror that's funny. I don't necessarily like horror comedy, and that's what this is going for. And it's just not my genre or subgenre.
Yeah.
Every week we thank a patron who has supported us at the $5 or higher level at patreon.com/ifanboy by giving them a dumb superpower. Josh, let's do some good for James E. McGill.
Well, I don't know if you can call this good, but what James E. McGill does
uh-huh.
is that he can give nipples feelings and sentience.
I was going to say nipples have feelings, Josh. They're
very
sensitive.
No. Genuine, they're sentience. The nipples are aware.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, in and of themselves.
In and of themselves. And I want to go so far as to say independent from their partner.
Okay.
So you've got two factions. Now, I haven't fully fleshed this idea out, if they can communicate that, or they're just in there having feelings like in Johnny Got His Gun. I hope not. That's terrifying. So let's hope they can communicate in some way. But James could, in fact, imbue your nipples with sentience.
I don't like how you used your there, but...
it's a threat.
One snipple, sure. Okay.
Did you say snipple?
No. I don't want to anger them.
No, it gives away. I think there's a lot of ripe drama in there.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure.
Something beyond titillation.
If it's not
saying.
The worst power, don't come on my show. When it was your show, maybe you had some leeway, but don't you come in here with your wordplay.
Hmm.
I'm not saying it's the worst power I've ever given, but it's got to be top 5 or top 2.
I'm not even going to tweak it. It's
I was mad at you, but I was impressed by that. So, you know, break the rules as long as it works. All right. You know what? That went fast enough. Let's do this one question.
Dave D from North Carolina says, you both mention every so often the number of books you had on a given week, but generally only discuss 10 or so. What other books do you have on your pull list that don't get talked about? Anything that you habitually read but never quite makes the cut? I always read Red Sonja books because I think they're fun, but would never really have anything to say about it. Just curious what your pull lists look like. So this was a, you know, I mean, this is a question more for you, but...
But you've done this. You've had the job.
There, I'm trying to think of, like, what are some of the books that are just, like, you know how, for anyone who's written a review of some kind of media, it's easy to write, you know, like a slammed, like a 10 out of 10 or like a 2 out of 10. But then there's those things that are reliably like 6s out of 10. Or 7s out of 10, and they're just tough to talk about.
Yes, I would give it the caveat of I do like, the exploration of, I think the conversation about Swan Song is a good example of this, where I don't think in the end the product is much more than, we'll say on a scale of, you know, 3.5. But it is interesting as you try to explore what they were trying to do and whether they were successful in it. So that's kind of interesting. To me, 10 out of 10s, I think, are I hate talking about 10 out of 10s because it just, you don't have to apply any thought to it. You just go, that was good. That bar was cool. Isn't it cool they did that? And you can sort of look for the craft in it. And with art, sometimes it's easier. But I mean, I don't think that there's a book I don't talk about regularly because, like, oh, I just don't talk about this. Like, I'm keeping a thing secret, or you know, it's not, if something is never going to be worth talking about, I wouldn't read it, basically. But there are plenty of books that are what they are, and I guess I enjoy them, but we've already talked about it, so it's hard to find anything new to say, and I don't want to come on every week and say the same thing about the same books.
Yeah, there are some books that are you know, routinely very, very good, but they're very, very good in the same way.
Yes.
And yeah, you don't want to have to repeat yourself. Okay, so I know you read, like, Usagi Yojimbo
pretty regularly. Example.
Yeah. Because, yeah, how often do you talk about it on the show? Not that much.
No, it did just come back after being, it was very regularly coming out, especially from IDW, and then it kind of went away, and now it's with Dark Horse again, and so they just started a new miniseries. But, and actually, we didn't talk about it because that was last week, and I normally only say, hey, this came out, it still makes me really happy, which is not interesting, but every once in a while, I like to remind people that it's there. It's difficult to talk about because it's kind of always the same, but in the best way.
Yeah.
The last issue was Usagi, Space Usagi, I think, and there was a couple of things that happened in it that I have never seen before. There was a double-page spread. I've never seen Sansakai do that. There was, it looked like Usagi Yojimbo, but there was just some things in there that, especially as we got near the end, and I don't know how the story works yet. I don't know. I would have talked about that. But most issues of Usagi Yojimbo are basically the same. And
I am looking at my several volume library of Usagi Yojimbo books, and I also cannot think of a double page spread.
It was it blew me away. I had never seen it. I think Hellboy was a book like that. I think BPRD, I think largely Mike Mignola books are like that. You go there for a, God, I hate saying it, for lack of a better word, a vibe, a feeling, a style, and you get it.
You know what you're going to get.
And it's not, and you like what you get, but it's not magnificent. It doesn't really invite analysis or, you know, there's things that you think are cool, but there's not. Those are just kind of the books that I read sort of out of habit in history, and I enjoy them. Usagi's there. I enjoy it. Every time there's a new one, I'm so happy about it. I have nothing to say about them. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, and I don't, I tend to not stick with books that get kind of mediocre. Like, I'll give something a few tries, and then like every Hulk series I've ever read in my life turns into that. You know, if you can't think of anything to say after a while and you're not really enjoying it, there's not a reason, then I don't bring them up. I don't know. I don't like, I really, I mean, I don't want to read bad books, but really mediocre books are almost worse. You know, it's fine. It's good, you know?
And then I think just based on the gig, like you end up, if it's, especially if it's your pick that week, you're going to maybe try some more things than you would normally. You definitely read more books than you would if you didn't have a podcast where you're talking
100%.
About books.
Yes.
So absolutely. You're looking for new things to talk about. And then a lot of times those things are like, well, I tried it, but there's not really much to say here.
Yeah. And then you've got to be aware of subjectivity of taste. And I think that we're pretty good at being upfront about that. But I mean, what I'm looking for generally in a given week, and my pick of the week is almost always what made me excited. What made me feel something that was unexpected, maybe not necessarily new, but the context, the, you know, sometimes it comes down to a page. But really, like, what we don't talk about has more to do with having nothing new to say and or nothing interesting to say. Really, I mean, that's what, this would be boring. And I, you know, we skirt the line. I think Ryan North's current Fantastic Four run is, and actually the Dan Slott run before it in a very different way. I'm running out of things to say about it, even though I love it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to talk about it because it makes me excited and I want to put it on here. But ultimately, if I'm saying the same thing I've said a bunch of times, I did it today. I did it like a bunch of times. I said, you know, Wild's End, we were able to talk about it, but my main point was, God, I love this.
Yeah.
Same thing with The Forged. Like, I just, you know, sometimes that's enough. Now, unless something drastic happens in one of those, you're not going to hear me talk about it again because I don't need to.
Yeah, a lot of times it's just you're reaching out to the invisible listener and trying to grab them by the collar and be like, please read this so I can continue to read this. Like, just please pick this up. Pick up this book.
That's definitely the case. That was the case with Lazarus, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went away. Dave, that's a good question. Thank you for that. I hope that was satisfactory for you.
I don't like to psychoanalyze, but Josh, you're talking about being dead inside, basically. And you also imbued someone with powers to make nipples feel something. And I think that there's a lot to be gleaned from that. And I'm just going to leave that to the listeners. So go ahead, read your copy.
I think the nipple thing was like, I wrote sentient nipples. And I was like, I don't know what to do with that. But I put it on my little list. And
that's
it was one of those things,
I wake up in the middle of the night and I jot down, I keep a notepad next to my bed. And then I wake up in the morning, like, what the fuck? Mm-hmm. Sentient nipples? What?
Yeah. I should give that to a guy.
Yeah.
I should make that be that person's thing. You can write to us at contact@ifanboy.com if you want it to be for the Media Explode or a non-comics show. You can write Media Explode in the subject line, and that would be helpful. Thank you for everybody who wrote in. We did the big 900 show, used up a lot of emails. We might need to replenish the banks a little bit. So if you didn't get something in for 900, this is probably a really good time to do that. So that we have stuff to talk about. We can get to your questions. What's going on here? So last month there was Media Explode number 40. We talked about Winning Time, which led into a longer conversation about HBO and how whoever they're just ruining the most beautiful brand.
Oof.
But then we sort of discovered maybe it wasn't as bad as we thought. Last week, obviously, there was Pick the Week number 900 because these are sequential and this is 901. But that was a big old 3-hour-plus live show where we went through a lot of emails and answered a lot of questions. Connor was not feeling well at all. And I don't know if you can tell that having listened to it, but that man is a trooper. He really got through that. And I thought it was a fun show. I actually really enjoyed it. It went so fast. October this month is Talksplode, presumably. I have a guest. I do not have it scheduled. New York Comic Con happened last week. There was much waylaying of COVID, from what I understand. And so I'll see where we are with that. I don't know if this person has been hit. I haven't heard from a lot of people after this. It's coming. If it doesn't come through this month, it'll come next month. But I'm going to go for this month. Anyway, those are all excuses for things that haven't happened. You want to do this next bit, this little part as we make our way out?
Yeah. You can find our library of over 1,300 shows and counting over at ifanboy.com and wherever podcasts are sold. Follow us at ifanboycomics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. It's not cheating. It's there for that. And sometimes for the best of the week in panels.
That reminds me, as I have to do that Instagram post.
Mm-hmm. Follow us individually. I'm Fuzzy Typewriter on Instagram. And Josh is Jeff Flanagan on Instagram.
Yeah, Jeff Flanagan.
He's a fun follow.
I don't believe I've ever had that pronounced that way, but it's so obvious now that I'm looking at it.
And why if you're into bikes, you're into dogs.
Yeah.
Jeff Flanagan on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. You were on several hundred of those 1,300 shows.
Yeah, I was.
Not an insignificant number.
Connor has a graph.
I'm sure he does.
Just with him at all times.
It's based on hard data. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. And be like, well, why would I do that? This is an audio show. And I would say, that's pretty much correct. but all of our old video shows are there. A historical look at nerds trying not to be too nerdy while being very nerdy at the same time. It's a swirling miasma. We will post this show there every week. Should you like to consume this in a semi-video form? Pretty much still just audio. This is still frame, basically. You can consider writing a review or leaving a star rating on Apple Podcast. You can like the stuff on YouTube, whatever. I'm not going
to
beg.
It's up to you.
Yeah, it's you know, does it help? Maybe.
It's a very personal thing.
It's true. If you know, it's not OnlyFans, but, you know, we're hoping somebody cares. And that's it. That's our show. I think this was a very, we did a very cerebral job.
Yes.
We really got into them.
Heady.
Yeah. And I enjoy that. I really like looking into those books, and you're a good partner for doing that. So.
Oh, you're a great partner too, Josh. Always. You don't neglect the nipples is what I'll say.
I feel like I was playing an improv game where I was like, oh, I'm just going to say this thing and go with it. And now you're using it against me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's weird. I recognize that. But I thought, oh, we'll just be wacky. If Monty Python did that, nobody's like, those guys got issues.
This was very similar to the feedback I got when I went out for the improv team in college. Mm-hmm. It's like, you kind of left me there. You kind of attacked me, Paul.
It's not for everyone.
No.
So that makes me Josh then. And I'm
Paul.
That's right, you are. We will see you next week. Not you, Paul. I mean, I guess it's possible.
I'm around. I'm out there.
Stay safe out there, folks.